Hi, my name is Aaron Marcus, and I know normally you listen to photographers, lighting people. Well, I'm kind of on the other end of the camera, and I'm going to be talking tonight about acting in commercial modeling and what photographers can do to make our lives great, and what we can do to try to help you guys out as well. So please sit back, take some time, and listen to Light Source.
And welcome to episode 31 of Light Source, the official podcast of StudioLighting.net, the website that introduces photographers to portrait and studio lighting equipment and techniques. I'm Bill Crawford, publisher.
And I'm Ed Hidden, exclusive photographer and image inspector with iStockPhoto.com. On this cough and flu edition of the Light Source, we're going to be interviewing someone a little bit different this evening. It's not a photographer and it's not anyone in the photo industry themselves. Rather, it's Aaron Marcus. He is a professional commercial model, and he puts on workshops from www.howtomodel.com. And he's going to talk to us about being on the other side of the camera. And hopefully out of this interview, you guys will get a chance to hear how it is for the subjects that we tend to shoot. And maybe you can glean some tips on how to direct your models better or answer the age-old question, how do you direct a model on set? Because that one seems to be coming up over and over again.
Yeah, I'm excited about this interview because of that reason exactly. We've got a lot of comments and a lot of questions in the Flickr group and also in our email account about, like, how do I pose a model? How do I work with someone who maybe doesn't have a lot of experience? So we thought it would be really cool to get someone on who does have a lot of experience to try to help teach some of our listeners how they can work with some of the models that they deal with. So this will be cool.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And it was kind of funny for him to comment to us afterwards that it was a bit of a different interview for him as well, because typically he's speaking to models instead right. of the people who are on the opposite side of the camera that he's working with. So it was a fun experience all the way around.
I have to agree.
Before we get into that, there is some big news that is probably... It's probably old news at this point when this show releases, yeah. But you had mentioned this one in our little pre-show, Bill.
Oh, you're going to let me talk about it first?
Yeah, sure. Well, let's go on. I'll let you release the news.
You let me break the news? Yeah, well.
I'll build you up here. Hold still. Drum roll.
Well, Adobe CS3 is out in beta for anyone who's interested to download it on their website at labs.adobe.com starting on the 15th of December.
That's pretty amazing, I think, that Adobe's actually gone to a public beta on Photoshop. That's like their flagship application, and it's always been under very, very tight lips as to the beta process on it. So, I mean, it's really interesting that it's out wide.
That is really cool. The whole lab mentality that they have going on over there is pretty cool. Maybe they had good experience with the feedback from Lightroom, but for whatever reason, it's free to download. You do need a CS2 serial number to activate it. If you don't have that, it only lasts for 2 days. So
my feeling is that they tried to get the PS3 beta out for the universal binary for the Intel Mac guys.
Exactly. Because everybody that was buying Macs is just probably going nuts because they couldn't use a native version of Photoshop. So all those MacBook Pro owners should be quite excited about this, I think.
Even though it is beta, it still should be...
screaming.
It should still take full advantage of the processor power there.
Yeah, and on their site they mentioned that they did keep some surprises for the full release, so I'm sure they'll have some cool features that we don't know about yet.
Well, we know it's been in some people's hands because it's turning out all over all of the blogs. Knapp has a learning center for it.
And there's books
Martin
out.
Martin Evening has a book out.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's so people have been playing with it so far.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we got to get ourselves on that list.
I agree. So how?
Well, we know Matt's listening. We know Mr. Kluskowski's listening, so maybe he can put in a good word for
us. Yeah, there we go.
But, I mean, aside from that, there's not really a whole lot of other news that's going on.
I was hoping
that we could probably take this intro to talk about some things that we've been doing lately.
Yeah, I think you're right. The only other thing that I even saw in the news was that Popular Photography got their hands on the Pentax K10D. And it was released in like September, or at least announced, and they got a chance to give it a pretty good run through. And they said it was really impressive.
Oh, that's great. That's good to know.
Yeah. It's nice to have another player in the DSLR, you know, the top models of all the top brands. This camera has the sensor, you know, built in anti-shake on the sensor, and a lot of it's right out of the gate, like weatherproof, which I thought was pretty cool. It just seems like they put some thought into it. Yeah. So
it does offer some compelling advantages possibly over the Canon, Nikon, Sony solutions.
It's at least a player, according to them. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, aside from the news, what have you been playing with?
Well, there are a few things in the StudioLighting.net labs, I guess. I just wanted to give a little teaser about. For one thing, we are playing with, or at least I have, you haven't got a chance to see it yet, but we have the Alien Bees ABR Moon Unit here that goes with their ABR 800 Ring Flash.
I'm so anxious to play with that.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. It is cool. I've taken some shots with it and had some fun assembling it. By the way, if anybody's ordered it or got theirs, you really need to use the instructions to put it together. I had it all backwards when I tried to ignore the instructions like a typically I do. But no, it's really cool, and everybody's anxious to see what the catch lights look like and whether or not they can achieve the now infamous Rick Diaz look with this light. So we've been having a lot of fun with it, and look for our review on the site in the near future.
You were going to say you ignored the instructions like a typical guy, weren't you?
I wouldn't say that, of course.
Well, there's not been a whole lot. Well, I shouldn't say that. There has been a bit going on with me, photo-related. Last week, I took the family on vacation down to Disney for a week.
Nice.
And I learned a couple things out on this trip. Number one, a 5D is not a good camera to carry around the park for a whole day. a Nikon D50 or a Rebel would be much better suited for that.
A little weight to it.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of heft to it. One day, I decided I was going to take my camera bag, which was a bigger mistake.
Wow.
So, yeah, I ended up only taking it a couple days and when we were going to be at some of the more picturesque parks or a little bit more time to, you know, to hang around and do some different things where we weren't so rushed. And the other days I ended up taking my PowerShot G2 with me. So
that works.
That made a better trip experience. But one of the cool photo things that was down there is there are Disney photographers at all of the parks. And typically when you would go to a park, you know, you would get your photo taken by someone and you'd have to stop by the gift shop on the exit of the park to make sure you pick them up for the end of the day. Well, they have this thing, it's called a photo pass. It's almost like a credit card. And when you get your photo taken by the Disney photographer the first time, they scan this and they give it to you. So when you're at a different section of the park or even in a whole other park completely, and you ask a Disney photographer to take your photo in front of a different, you know, landmark, you hand them your card, and after the photo is taken, they scan the little barcode on the back, and it takes all of your photos from all of the parks from whichever Disney photographer, and it all puts it in the same account. So when you get home, you just go on to DisneyPhotoPass.com and put in the serial number on the back of your card, and all of your pictures from all of the parks from all of the different photographers are there to either look at, email, or purchase, whatever you want to do, all at your convenience when you're home and you don't feel pressured by all of the Disney merchandise that you're inundated right. with while you're down there.
That is
so
slick.
It's kind of a cool little system.
That is a very cool system. I could think of a couple of different applications for a system like that, like sports shooters and stuff like that would come in quite handy.
I could see it for event photographers, for all kinds of different you know, avenues for this. I don't know if it's out there widely available. I don't know if it's something proprietary from Disney. But if any of the pros that are listening to this show have any information on it, go ahead and post something in the show notes to this show on Flickr. And if anyone's interested in it, maybe we can find someone who knows a little bit more about this.
That would be pretty cool. That's definitely neat.
Yeah, it's pretty slick. I had seen it the other year when I was down there, actually about 2 years ago. So it's not anything new, but it is definitely something that they're continuing to do. It's pretty cool.
No doubt.
And you would have been happy to know that they were all running Nikon equipment, Bill.
Well, you know, when money's no object and quality counts.
I think there were D70s or D50s. I'm not sure.
That's cool.
Actually, and you know, a lot of them were running D50s with 18 to 50 or whatever the 18 to 55 lenses. Is that the kit lens?
Yeah, that's probably the kit lens.
So, they must have bought a bulk or whatever of them because everybody had the same thing.
That's funny. They probably got some deal.
Probably.
And I'm just teasing about the money being no object thing. Canon makes sweet products, too.
It's not like they outfitted everybody with D2Xs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're going for...
Yeah, the middle-of-the-road consumer, prosumer, line model.
Yeah, sweet.
Well, one other cool Disney thing, we had to keep the kids out of school for a week to go down there, which was not cool. That wasn't too cool, but when we got back, my poor first grader had, homework every single night just to get caught up. And one of the conditions of going on this so-called educational trip was that he had to do some kind of a report. So we're looking at the paperwork tonight because, of course, it has to be handed in tomorrow. And if you listen closely in the background, you can probably hear the printer going right now. So that's
nice.
Yeah. One of the things that you can do is a photo essay.
Oh, sweet.
So, of course, being the camera nut that I am, I took a lot of photos. And we wanted to print something out to help him out for this photo essay. But, of course, being last minute, because he's been working all week, we were like, all right, what are we going to do? Are we going to print out a bunch of these and just stick them on paper, or what are we going to do? Previously, I had bought, Epson had the Storyteller photo book creators. And it's a pretty cool little system. And what you would do is it comes with a hardbound book and all of the paper for it. And then it comes with software that you load all of your images into. And it gives you a way to easily build a little photo book Storyteller type thing. So what we decided to do was I ran through a bunch of the images, output them as JPEGs, and I took and just drug them all into a little 10-page layout and, kind of tailored everything towards, page one was the trip down there, page two was Animal Kingdom,
right.
Page three was MGM.
And they have templates for the layout?
They were all templates for the layout. That's cool. It was all easy to work with. And I just said to Kyle as we're sitting here, I said, hey, what do you want to say about this photo? What did you learn here?
That's awesome.
So he dictated it to me. I did the typing. And this was all after he got a shower before we went to bed.
That's really cool.
So now we're printing it all out for him. So we'll have it all in the morning.
And then it has a binding glue or something that you...
What it does in the hardcover book, it's bound with a thin strip that's like a glue strip.
Oh, okay. And then you stick the paper in there.
Exactly. And it's actually what it is they have the full page... So that you can position the top left and top right of the page, and then you can tear off the extra off of the backside of it.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, so it's a pretty cool little setup. We don't actually have another one of the hardbound books, but we at least have, these well laid out pages for this.
Right.
So he's going to have a little easy created photo book report that he actually did contribute with because he was telling me what he wanted to say for these.
It's just a little help from Dad.
And a little bit of help from Epson.
That's pretty cool.
So, yeah, that's a little something going on here.
Awesome. Well, you did bring one thing back from your trip, which was a cold.
Yes, this is true. I did bring back a cold with me, and that's what you get for being cooped up in a van for 16 hours with two people coughing and sneezing the whole way back. So, So I was a little quiet during this interview, so I tried to let Bill... take a little bit more of the forefront, and I stop my babbling as much as I normally do, kind of like I'm doing now. So we should probably just move right on into the interview.
All right, sounds good. Let's hear from Bill and Raspy Ed.
On this edition of The Late Source, we have with us this evening Aaron Marcus. Now, it's going to be a little bit of a different episode because Aaron is a full-time actor and commercial model and has been in the industry since 1986. He's been involved with TV, radio productions for such clients like AT&T, McDonald's, Chevy, Discovery Channel. If you go to his website, howtomodel.com, I'm sure you'll recognize his face as something that you've seen before. And actually, something that I didn't tell you before the interview, Aaron, I recognize your face from somewhere else. One of the images on your photo section is one that I actually did the Photoshop work on.
That's incredible.
So, yeah, I'm actually very familiar with your look, and you were a great model for the job that we did, and I'm sorry I wasn't on the photo shoot to actually get to meet you, but I get to meet you now.
Cool.
So, Aaron, you've been in the modeling business for quite a while. Can you give us a little bit about your background and what it is that you've been up to?
Sure. The short version, kind of a short version is Back in 1984, that's really when I got started. I was actually a full-time college student. And basically, I needed a job to support myself while I was in school. And I ran into an actor, and I was asking him what he did, and he was telling me, and I thought, wow, that sounds pretty neat. And so I got started working primarily in the Baltimore, Washington, Northern Virginia area while I was a full-time student. And I was doing some acting and commercial print work. I was doing some extra work. And what I found was that I loved doing this stuff, and I was actually getting bookings, which really surprised me. And so after doing it part-time for 2 years, from 84 to 86, in 1986, I decided not to become a physical therapist and to try acting for a year just to see what it was like. And I've just been very fortunate, and that's how I've been making my living since 1986. And I do a variety of things, everything from commercial print to some TV shows, some film work, training films, voiceover work. I've done some live productions, and so, you know, basically I try to keep my hands in as many things as possible. And one of the things that's kind of neat is that now on weekends, I do seminars. And basically I teach people what I do during the week, and I even wrote a book, How to Become a Successful Commercial Model.
That's great. And that's one of the reasons we wanted to have you on a show. We consider you an expert in your field, and we thought that a little later in the interview we might ask you some questions about the photography end of things from the model's perspective. So it's great to have you on tonight.
Sure. Hey, and by the way, Ed, which piece did you work on?
Was it
the Stick Farm?
No, it was the one where you were the accountant with the very wide angle look. It was the Independent Auto Salvage Pools campaign.
Oh yeah, yeah. Now, that was neat. There was a whole series of those shots, as a matter of fact.
And all the looks were amazing. They were, you know, as a character actor, it was. We could have asked for a better model for it.
Oh well, thanks so much. Actually, one, I was dressed up as a woman. That was always that's always neat.
There was a tennis player.
Right. Yeah, I think there were like six different shots in there, and that was a really, really fun shoot.
Yeah, I wish I could have been there for it. I was working on a different project, but yeah, I got accustomed to the proofs on the backside of it when I came back to the office. So
cool.
I kind of feel like I know you now. I feel like I know you even more.
Well, just to lay a little bit of groundwork, I thought that maybe we'd get started by just making a subtle distinction, if we can, Aaron, about the difference between what the type of modeling that you focus on and that you do compared to, like, maybe fashion modeling and that sort of thing.
Sure. Yeah, it's really neat because normally when people think about modeling, people think about fashion modeling, and those are very tall, unusual-looking women who are always, with a couple of exceptions in the world, pretty much they are between 5'9 and 6 feet tall. They're size 2 to 6. Men are generally 6 foot to 6 foot 2, wearing a size 40 jacket. And basically what you have to do in order to be a successful fashion model is be a walking coat hanger. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, you've got to make clothing look alive and look interesting. And the reason why they have such narrow statistics for the models, that's because the designers believe that their clothes will look best in a very specific size. And so they don't make the clothes to fit the models. The models have to fit the size that the designers happen to love. And it's a real tough world in the fashion world. I mean, there are people that make an absolute fortune doing that, you know, and they might be making $50,000 for, you know, walking down a runway for an afternoon. But the looks change very, very quickly. Like I said, you have to have very specific statistics, and you have to have the look that is in today. And basically, the way I kind of view it is, it's like, you know, professional basketball players. I mean, there are people, whether they're 12 people to a team, to an NBA team, you know, who are, yes, 6'5", 6'8", 6'9", that can hit three-pointers and run up and down the court gracefully, but there aren't that many people in the world that really can do that. With commercial modeling, and in some ways it's kind of the opposite, you see commercial models every place. You see commercial models on billboards, on posters, on sides of buses, on newspaper ads, magazine ads, in the yellow pages, on the internet, on consumer products. We're all over the place. And the thing that's so cool about commercial modeling is they need everybody. Sometimes they need beautiful women who might be doing Land's End catalogs or cruise line brochures, and sometimes they need people who look like me, nerds, and everybody in between. And so that's the thing that's so cool. There are no height or weight or age restrictions for commercial models. I mean, I've worked with kids who are 3 months old, and I've worked with people in their 80s. So basically, if you are breathing and you can make it to a photographer's studio, there's a possibility that you could work as a commercial model. Now, I don't want to give the appearance that it's, you know, it's simple and, you know, anybody who wants to get started, you're going to start working right away. No, I mean, it's like any other business. I mean, it takes time. You want to do your research. You want to learn as much as you possibly can. But the more knowledgeable people are about the industry, the greater the chances are you're going to have success with it.
Well, if, as you described it, it can be challenging, I'm sure, at times as well. What makes a good commercial model? What would be the defining?
That's a great question. One of the things that makes a great commercial model is somebody who has the ability to look real. What generally happens with commercial models, and I am sure that it must be nightmares for photographers, where somebody might get booked off of their composite sheet because they have, you know, the right general look for a particular job. And then all of a sudden you show up on the set and the photographer starts asking for really very specific emotions and expressions. That's where it can be tough. I mean, a perfect example, I did an ad, and it's for a supplement for people with bad livers. And so basically, I had to look like a guy who was having some serious health issues. And it was a pretty serious kind of shot. And there were some very subtle looks that were needed where I didn't look angry. They didn't want me looking sad. They needed me to be somewhat concerned. So what makes a really strong commercial model is somebody who has the ability to take directions from photographers and show them a variety of layers of expressions and emotions. Because I can tell you what my goal is for every job. I want to drive the photographer and the art and the creative director crazy in the sense of I'm going to give them so many options that are interesting that could possibly work that they're going crazy trying to figure out which one is the best one because there are a lot of choices. Now, when I first got started, that is a nice problem to have. Now, I can tell you, when I first got started, and I didn't have a clue as to what I was doing, I basically just made faces. And I'm sure I was driving these people crazy, but in the sense of they're trying to, you know, salvage one photo from the session. So to me, I think that's what makes a great commercial model. Somebody who gives the photographer the time and the ability to just worry about the technical aspects of the shot and not have to hold the model's hand and try to explain to them, oh no, you're supposed to be happy. Can I see a smile in there? And it just makes everybody's life so much easier in a much more enjoyable setting when the model, you know, has some acting skills and can just let loose and show a variety of expressions and emotions.
Well, speaking of the actual setting itself, when you typically do a shoot, when do you get brought into the process? How early do you start communicating with the photographer or art directors as to what you need to do to get prepared for a shoot?
It's a funny thing. I am at the lowest end of the totem pole when it comes to doing commercial print shoots. You know, I get the phone call generally from an agent, unless it's a direct booking with somebody. And then I go over a whole list of questions, everything from what kind of wardrobe is needed. And one of the things that I do, and also I teach in the seminars, is as a commercial model in that kind of setting, I always like to put myself in the photographer's shoes, in the art and creative director's shoes. So if they say, if I'm being told, okay, well, you're a business person, you know, they need a suit and, you know, a couple of ties, I'm going to bring a ton of stuff because I want to make sure that there are lots of options. And I, you know, look, I've done over 1,000 projects. I know, and I've seen this happen where models will show up on a set with, you know, one suit, you know, one or two shirts, one or two ties, and sometimes that creates some incredible problems. So, you know, I try to bring as much as I possibly can. As far as the emotional aspects of the shoot, I won't know anything until I walk on the set, and generally I try to get there early. I just kind of sit in a corner waiting for, you know, the photographer and everybody to get all their stuff together. Then right before we start to shoot, first thing I'm going to say is, so what exactly are you looking for? And a lot of times, photographers don't necessarily know how to communicate with me. they're used to working with regular models where they'll just say, well, you know, you're a doctor, you're happy. See, happiness doesn't tell me anything. You know, am I happy because I won a malpractice case? Am I happy because I saved somebody's life? Am I happy? I don't, because I decided to give up accepting insurance because, you know, I can't practice. You know, so I like to pinpoint it, because the clearer the information is to me, the closer I can hone in on what they're going after. Now, that's not to say I'm still going to give you a lot of different options, and I might even head in a direction you didn't ask about. I'll ask, hey, can I try out a couple of ideas here once I feel like we're done? But, you know, generally I don't have a clue as to what is really needed until seconds before we start shooting.
Sometimes that's a good thing too, because it might end up sparking an art director's idea and something he hadn't thought of before as well.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's not uncommon that after we finish the shoot and the photographer says, well, you know, I think we have what we need, I still have a bunch of ideas, generally still be like bouncing around in my head. And I'll just say, hey, do we have time? Can I just play around with a few things? And it's not uncommon for those shots are the ones that are used. Just because I make it, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't be saying this to photographers, but you know, I don't want to step on anybody's toes on the set. I realize everybody has a very important function there, and I would never say to anybody on the set, hey, guys, I think you're really heading in the wrong direction here. I see the layout. This really isn't what they're asking. You know, so I'm never going to do anything like that. So I will always give you what you're asking for, and then I will try to very subtly ask if I could play around with something, if it's something that I think that's just missing, or maybe there's an area that I really didn't tap into during the shoot, just for another kind of look. And, you know, then we'll take it from there. But I can tell you, you know, there are times when I'm on the set, too, where it's very clear that other people on the set don't want to hear from me. It doesn't happen too often, but every once in a while that will happen. And in that case, it does not become a collaborative effort, which is what I prefer. But, hey, look, you know, I'm just a hired hand here, and, you know, you guys are the ones who are paying my bills. So if you don't want to hear from me, I mean, that's fine, too. But generally, I find it's a much more enjoyable experience, and people get a lot more out of it when, you know, the egos kind of get dropped and we're all working together here to try to, you know, come up with a great, great product.
Right.
Well, if it matters much at all, a lot of the photographers actually that we've interviewed on this show really talk about their desire to, you know, create a connection between the person that they're shooting. So it seems like, at least from the guys that we talk to, that they particularly enjoy having the rapport and that kind of collaborative spirit.
I agree. I mean, that's how probably 99% of the sessions go. And what I have found is, look, there are a lot of really good technical shooters out there. What, from my experience, the people that stand out in the crowd, the ones who really come up with phenomenal ads or campaigns, those are the ones that are really good therapists. Those are the ones that, you know, can take somebody who maybe is a little bit greener, you know, somebody who hasn't had, you know, perhaps that much experience, and they know how to bring out the best in that person. Because for most people, you know, until they've gotten to a stage where they've done this a lot, it can be a very scary situation. You know, it's weird when you've got a camera sitting right in front of you and you're being asked to do things. Sometimes it can be a little intimidating. And so I just find that when you work with photographers that understand that, know what to say to the model, know how to relax them, how to distract them sometimes, those are the people who are just phenomenal. And those are the ones that will come out with the best photos.
Well, let's explore that a little bit, because we talked about what makes a good commercial model, and you touched on a few things. But from the model's perspective, what are some things, sort of tips maybe, for the photographer that's just getting into commercial photography or working with someone who's just getting into commercial photography as a model? What can we do as photographers to make that transaction happen?
That's a great question. You know, nobody's ever asked me that. Well, I can tell you one thing. And this is like right off the bat, as soon as you walk into the studio or location or wherever, you know, you're shooting, just take a moment to walk over to the model, introduce yourself, because there's a good chance you've never met this person before. You might have booked them off of a comp car. You might have booked them off of somebody's website. They might have gone to a go-see, but it was such a cattle call that, you know, the photographer wasn't even there. You know, it was just assistants. I mean, I was at a go-see in New York, and there were two assistants. They were seeing that many people. So, you know, the photographer, you know, wouldn't even see the model until the actual shoot date. So just take, you know, 30 seconds, walk over, introduce yourself, you know, welcome the person, make them feel at home. Just tell them, hey, it's nice to have you on the set, looking forward to working with you. You know, just being a human being with them, even though I understand that you guys are under a tremendous amount of pressure. I mean, I feel it even, and this is something that I think it's really important for other models to understand. Sometimes when it's a small paying job and models kind of go, well, you know, it doesn't really pay that much. You know, who really cares? If I show up a few minutes late, what's the big deal? And the way that I view those things is it might be a small paying job, you know, for both the photographer and for the model. But if the product doesn't come out great, then the ad agency might not want to use that photographer again. And maybe the next project that pops up for that photographer, you know, could have been a huge, you know, international ad campaign.
Right.
So I always feel that every job is huge. Because the money, honestly, look, I make my living, you know, as an actor and a commercial model, but I never base anything on acceptance as far as finances go. So, anyway, kind of getting back to your question, even with all the pressure and you're running around, really just taking a moment, maybe asking the model, hey, can I get you something to drink? Would you like some water? Would you like some coffee? Is there anything I can do? You know, just welcome the person into their home. And I think that little introduction can really go a long way. And the other thing, too, is when you are shooting, if you're finding that the model is not giving you what you want, instead of banging them over the head, you know, hey, no, hey, buddy, I said I need a bigger smile here. I'm not seeing that. I'm not, you know, instead of going that route and really creating even more of a horror or more of a nightmare for the model, sometimes you just kind of have to sit back and then go in sideways, you know, and try to figure out, okay, well, this is what I'm looking for. I'm not getting it this way. So let me try to figure out another way to do it where I'm not, you know, beating up the model, because apparently there's a problem here. And, I mean, that's the concern that I always have for photographers. I mean, it must be a nightmare when you book somebody that you haven't worked with before and the person looks good. You know, but, man, there's a big difference between, you know, looking good in past photos and being able to really pull off what is needed. So I think those two things, you know, number one, just relaxing the model and just having a real clear understanding of what is needed. I can tell you something else, and I don't see this very often, but I've witnessed it, I don't know, maybe three or four times in my life that it really left an impression on me. Even if you're treating the model really well and you're treating the art and the creative director really well, please be nice to the assistant also. I'm telling you, I've been in situations, and I can tell you, I've never said anything because it's just not—it's not my place, it's not my battle. But I've seen some photographers just nail their assistants. Just they're so rude and arrogant and demeaning to those people, and it creates a really nasty attitude on the set and a really bad feel on the set. And you don't feel like you want to run through a wall for somebody, you know, when that kind of stuff happens. So that's another suggestion. It's not has nothing to do with the other model, but I guess it's just kind of an overall philosophy that I have is just, hey, look, just treat everybody who's there with the same kind of respect that you would like to be treated with. And, you know, really, you can get just as much from people being nice to them as tearing them down and making them look silly. And so that's something else that I would suggest. Keep in mind, even if somebody is just volunteering and trying to help and learn the craft, you know, treat them well, you know, and I think things will go much, much better for the session.
Well, that's some really great advice. It makes sense just to keep it on a human level and keep the whole set kind of energized and everybody professional, I think would make a big difference.
You know, it's one other thing that just popped into my head. Ask about breaks. You know, if we're in the middle of a shoot and if a model is holding something or they're in an unusual position, sometimes photographers forget about the models. And if the spot that you're in is crucial, you know, I'm not going to move because I know, you know, everything is set, you know, in a certain way. And sometimes I've been in situations where I've had to call over to a photographer who is, you know, sitting and talking with other people at this point. You know, excuse me, can I take a break for a minute? They forgot about me, you know? Sometimes that stuff happens. And once again, I realize, you know, we're not the client. There's a lot going on. Certainly there's a lot happening behind the scenes that I'm not going to be privy to. So just try to keep us in mind during the photo session as well. And, you know, it's always nice to hear, hey, do you need a break? Do you need something, you know, to drink? We've been working for a few hours. Most of the time, at least for me, I don't. But it's always nice to have that option.
Do you ever enjoy seeing the photos during the shoot, or is that not that important to you?
You know, You guys are really asking some great questions. These are things that are never asked of me because generally I'm talking to models. So this is pretty cool. For me, it's not important unless we've done like a whole slew of shots. And it's, you know, especially like today when you're shooting digitally and there's just like millions of them being done. And there's a group of people and they're saying, you know what, this is the area that we're kind of liking.
Okay.
Then it's helpful for me to see because with the method that I use, I'm going through so many permutations that I really have no idea what you're liking, you know, at that point, especially if it was something I did, you know, a couple minutes ago. So in that sense, if it's just for a point of reference, then it is helpful. Otherwise, it's really not necessary. Generally, I will walk over to a monitor if I'm invited to, only just to be sociable. You know,
okay.
I do know there are models that do like that. I think it's, I don't know, maybe it's just more of an ego thing where they like seeing themselves and it makes them feel better to, you know, to be able to do that. But for me, it's not necessary. Like I said, unless there's a specific look that everybody seems to be liking and they want me to kind of stay in that range.
That makes sense.
Now, in your seminars that you do, when you you teach models and things like that, do you go over posing and things like that for what they should do?
Yeah, and you know, and it's funny you mentioned the word posing because that's the word that I tell people to forget about. I tell them, do not pose. You do not want to pose as a commercial model. You don't want to look like a model. And when I find that people are actually kind of stiffening up, posing, holding a position, then they look like models. And in the commercial world, that's not what people are buying. I mean, they want real-looking people. So, yeah, there's a very specific technique that I use that's kind of unusual where, you know, it's kind of hard to demonstrate it over the phone. But but basically, I look away from the camera. I will either say a word or two or do an internal monologue and think the words to myself so that it takes me to a place where I can show the expression and the emotion that the photographer is asking of me. And when you work that way, then you don't have to ask the kind of questions that I see some models asking a photographer. Okay, you're supposed to be really excited. You just hit the lottery. Well, what would you like me to do with my hands? You want them up in the air, on the sides? You know, should I be clenching a fist? Well, see, when you're really feeling it, then you don't have to ask the questions. Or if you're supposed to be frustrated, or you're in love and you're angry, whatever you're being asked of, when you're really feeling the emotions, you don't have to ask the photographer. Now, there are times when a photographer might say, hey, look, with the way your hands are positioned, it might feel right, but according to the camera, it doesn't look real, or, you know, we're chopping off your hands, which is not a good look for this particular shot. So you've got to have to, you know, move them closer in, and then you have to find landmarks. But, yeah, I mean, I spend a good amount of time teaching people how to work in front of a camera, and basically it would be the exact same thing that I'd be teaching photographers, so that they would be able to utilize that information and use it with the models on the sets.
So we should be asking questions about different emotions more than body positions and that sort of thing. I mean, composition is important, but to get them there.
Right, let's just take an example. Let's say this is an ad for, you know, a tutoring company. You know, there's somebody's getting ready to take their SAT exams. And so this is a tutoring company. On the front cover of this brochure, you're shooting a 16-year-old kid who's sitting at his desk, and the kid is supposed to be frustrated. Well, generally, people will start pretending. They'll start kind of, you know, making different kinds of faces to look frustrated. You know, what I would suggest for the photographer to do, once again, if the person's not giving you what you need, you know, you walk over and just say, hey, you know, like, have you ever taken, you know, studied really hard for an exam and you just bombed it? Yeah, the person would say, yeah, sure. Okay, that's really what I want you to be thinking about, you know, and try to walk them through the process. And that's why, you know, when I said very early on, it's almost like the greatest photographers are the therapists who really know how to tap into things and really gauge people and have a clear understanding of where the person is heading, what works, what doesn't work, and can just very calmly, you know, offer suggestions. That's how you get really, really powerful shots from models. So, yeah, that's one segment. You know, I also spend a lot of time just talking about how to create strong commercial photos, because, you know, a lot of photographers really, unless you've done it a lot, you probably don't know. And a lot of times people are still thinking fashion shots for people, and maybe they'll put a product in there, you know, an article of clothing, to make it kind of look like a commercial shot. And, you know, one of the problems with using, let's say, you know, a logo or a brand name in a shot, because I know sometimes models like to do that because it will give everybody in the world the appearance that maybe they really, you know, did an ad for, you know, L.L. Bean. You know, if there's a L.L. Bean logo on their, you know, on their jacket. Well, the problem that you run into when you're working that way is, number one, L.L. Bean didn't give you permission to use their logo or brand name, which that's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is if there is an ad campaign for a competitor and you're plastered, you know, with logos of a competitor on your comp card, well, you know, you probably won't be considered for that particular ad campaign because they're thinking, oh, this person worked for a competitor of ours. You're potentially cutting yourself out of work.
Interesting.
You know, when you start using logos and brand names in your test shots. So I think that's something that's really important for beginning photographers as well as models to know about. And even things like model release forms and vouchers and even just like with marketing. I mean, one of the things that it's the same information that I would tell a model to do as far as marketing goes. I would say the same thing to a photographer. You know, as a new photographer, or even, you know, an experienced photographer, you want to get your work seen by art and creative directors and advertisers. And there are many different ways and avenues of finding ad agencies. I mean, everything from finding a red book at major libraries, which is a great way of finding advertising agencies. You can go to AAAA.org, American Association of Advertising Agencies, and, you know, see if you can set up appointments, show your work. I mean, it really seems like marketing is the name of the game. You know, you've got to let people know that you're out there. So the best thing, you know, for somebody, for a photographer who's just getting started and they want to build up their commercial portfolio, well, you can do test shots with models and you just, you know, work out a deal where neither one of you charges the other person anything, and you can walk out of there with some great test shots, some really strong commercial photos that actually look like ads. And that's one of the tricks. You want the photos to look like ads and not just, you know, nice, pretty pictures of people smiling, you know, and then change wardrobe with a different background and do another shot and then change the wardrobe with another background, another smiley shot. You want to show a variety of expressions and emotions and, once again, make the photos look like ads. And then, yeah, start shopping them around to ad agencies and let people know, you know, what your skills are. And that's it's just a great way to try to drum up some business.
So speaking of marketing and the TFP that you were just talking about, what's your opinion of some of the online model communities that are evolving?
You know, I think they can be really helpful to people. You know, when I hear a website that might say, you know, we've got, you know, 800,000 models on our website, and for only, you know, $1,000 a year, you could be seen by, you know, a photographer in Tokyo. Well, for something like that, I think I'd rather make an investment and have my photos on an agent's website. If I'm going to pay to be on a website, I want it to be an agent's website, so at least I know, you know, there are a limited amount of people. There are specific ad agencies and photographers who will visit those sites. But there are a lot of websites that you can go to that do not charge. You know, you might get the bottom tier package, and that can be a real helpful thing, you know, for models if you don't have your own website, or for photographers as well. So that way, at least when you are meeting people, and if somebody wants to see you online, you're there, and you can just give them the address, and they can go right there, and, you know, they can see your work. So I think in that sense, it can be very helpful. But, and I'm sure you see this as well. I mean, the whole world of photography and modeling is changing so rapidly. Like, I mean, when I was first getting started, most of the agents that I worked with came out with modeling books, and I would pay anywhere from $125 to about $650 to be in my agent's modeling book. And basically, you know, we'd have anywhere from 2 to 5 pictures on a page, and then those books would be shipped out to ad agencies and photographers. In today's time, there are very few agents that still have books. Most of them have websites. And in some ways, it kind of makes me nuts, because here, you know, I spent a fortune putting together my website. And on my website, you can see a lot of my photos. I probably have, I don't know, like 20, 30, something like that, of commercial shots. You can see my acting reel. You can listen to my voiceover work and, you know, see my resume, my headshots, you know. And but here I'm, you know, spending a lot of money on lots of other agents' websites just for representation. But, you know, I feel like it's something that I have to do, because that's how people are marketing these days. I mean, that's even just like with digital photography. I remember, I mean, I was doing digital shots up in New York when it first got started. And it was weird. I felt so isolated, because the way that it used to be, I would be in one side of the studio and the monitor and the art director and photographer were completely on the other end of the studio. And it was almost like being in a sound booth. I wouldn't talk to people. I wasn't hearing it. I didn't know what was going on. And so at least now, you know, with modern day technology, I mean, you know, most people have gone to digital, you know, digital photography, but it's just incredible. I mean, there are things, I mean, like you were talking about, you know, the some of the Photoshop work that you did. I mean, there are things that you can do today with photography that you simply couldn't do years ago. That part of it is great. The part that makes it a little bit more difficult for people like me is, like, years ago, if I was going to do a shot by a lake, you know, we'd spend the whole day out there, you know, and then it would be a beautiful afternoon and it's a full day booking. You know, now I'm sitting in the photographer studio with a dead fish in my hand and they, you know, just drop in this lake in the background. It looks great. I mean, it looks like I am there. But, you know, I might have an hour, you know, or 2 or 3 hour photo session instead of a, you know, a full day booking. So I find that, you know, it, years ago, everything had to be so accurate and everything was so meticulous because to hire an airbrusher to clean up mistakes, you know, hair that's a little out of place or a pen that's not sitting in the right position on a desk. And now, you know, everybody just says, hey, don't worry, we'll fix it later.
Right.
So the photo sessions don't last as long for us. But on the flip side, you simply can just do things today that you couldn't do years ago.
Well, speaking of getting paid for what you do, for photographers that might be interested in doing commercial photography, a lot of questions I hear oftentimes is it worth it paying for a model? Or should I be working with the ones that are building their portfolio? Just in your general opinion, what do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting kind of question. I guess what I would think about is this. I would never say to a photographer, you've got to hire somebody who has had a lot of experience. I mean, I'd like that to be the case, but hey, the reality is you never know who you're going to work with. And there are some people who are, you know, just walking off the street who are just phenomenal, you know, and will give you just, you know, tremendous looks and you'll walk away with some incredible photos. However, it's the unknown. Basically, you're going out on a blind date, you know, and you know, you're knocking on somebody's door. When they open up the door, you don't know who you're looking at. So, yeah, I mean, if you got a lot of free time to date around and or, you know, if finances aren't all that great and you need to, you know, kind of test the waters a little bit, sure, you know, try to work with some people that don't have much experience and, you know, that aren't going to charge you anything, who do want to build up their portfolio. And I know I'm kind of, you know, cutting my own throat here by you know, offering that, but I mean, that's how I feel. If it's a project and you can't afford to take a chance with somebody brand new, somebody without any experience, then to me it's money well spent. Because that's invaluable to be able to not only know that you're going to walk out of there with some great shots, but hopefully if it's a really good model, they'll be able to offer you suggestions as well. And, you know, nothing is going to sell a photographer better than to be able to present photos that work and are, you know, are part of successful ad campaigns. But if you're trying to build up a portfolio, yeah, take some chances. I mean, I say the same thing to models. I mean, you know, if you're trying to build up your portfolio and you know exactly how to create the right kinds of shots, and I, like even in my seminar in my book, I mean, I've got a whole homework assignment. So, you know, you can be really very, very prepared for this. And I tell people, why don't you go to a local college and see if they have an art department? And if they do, see if there are photography classes and see if you can find a student who is interested in building up, you know, a strong commercial portfolio and you just do a trade. So I would definitely give it a shot if it's something that's not crucial, it's not something you've got a deadline on and something that just has to be incredible, you know, that day.
You know. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's the same thing for photography. Sometimes you get a guy that's just starting out who's just naturally very talented. Other times, you know, you have someone who you're trying to explain the camera to. So it goes both ways, I guess.
And I'm kind of curious on your end. Are there some things that kind of make you crazy when working with models?
I think one thing that Ed and I had talked about before was that sometimes I think the photographers, at least at the lower levels, I'm not saying that someone who's been in the industry for years and years, but I think sometimes the photographers are equally as uncomfortable, especially in a situation where they know that everybody's expecting them to control the set, to control the lighting, control the camera, and also tell the model what to do. So a lot of times it is really nice to work with a professional model who you can just give a little bit of direction or give them the overall feel of the shot and let them run with it rather than worrying about, well, I have to tell them exactly where I want them to stand and what I want them to do and, you know, all the little details.
So that seems to be the million-dollar question we see on our discussion group as well as on other forums, as well as it comes up time and time again. How do you direct models?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it must be every photographer's nightmare when you are in the middle of a shoot and the model is just dead.
Yeah, they're waiting for you to tell them what to do. That's probably the most frustrating thing, because even if you have an image in your mind that you're trying to get out of the model, then sometimes it's hard to communicate that or they don't understand what you're trying to say or what you'd like to see, and you know, that I think it has a lot to do with the personalities too. Sometimes you just don't click, and that's just going to happen once in a while, I guess.
Well, I think the best case scenario really is when everybody is viewing this as their own project,
right,
and everybody's trying to bring stuff to the table, because there's a common cause here. I mean, you know, when I'm walking out of a session, I mean, my thoughts are always, oh, I hope the client's really happy with this. You know, I hope this is an incredibly successful ad campaign for them, because for me, you know, I never look at things as a quick hit. You know, it's not, well, how much money can I make at this particular job, and who cares what happens with it? Most of my work, it's repeat business. And so I like being able to walk into, you know, a familiar setting. And so when things go well, and I'm assuming they will, I'm going to be asked back. You know, why wouldn't somebody ask me back, as long as I do a good job? But something, it just kind of reminded me, I can give you a little suggestion. It's based on a story that where I experienced something that a photographer did that I would not recommend other photographers do. And this is many years ago when I was doing a shot with a little kid. And it was very clear that this kid did not want to be on the set.
I think and I worked with him.
That's funny. And it was tough. I mean, it was one of these situations, and I don't know if you experienced this as well. It was very clear early on that it was the mother that really wanted to be the model.
Right.
And for whatever reason, she couldn't, she didn't have the courage, whatever the reason was, she was really living her life vicariously through this kid. And this kid didn't want to be there. And I'm doing whatever I could to play with him, and, you know, we're doing all kinds of goofy things. I'm trying to relax the kid. And then at one point, because the kid just wouldn't smile, he was supposed to be really excited and happy. So the photographer walks over to this kid, and he said, "Hey, do you like ice cream?" And I'm thinking, that's brilliant. Bribe the kid. Of course, that's how you do it. And the kid goes, "Yeah." And he looks at him, like, right in the eyes, and he goes, "Well, let me just tell you something, kid. If you don't start smiling, you are never going to have ice cream again for the rest of your life." And the kid burst into tears, and he's screaming. And I'm trying to relax. I'm saying, "Oh, no, no, he really didn't mean it. Really, he didn't mean that. You know, he was just..." So,
of course, the photographer's going, "Oh, yeah, I meant it."
Right. So, just a little suggestion. You might want to take a different path, especially with little kids. But
that makes sense.
Little kids are really... It's really tough, man. If you got a kid that doesn't want to be there and is not offering you stuff, wow.
Yeah.
That's a tough world.
I vowed that I would never work with kids again after one shoot that I had to art direct. And then after I had kids, it changed my opinion.
Well, you probably learned how to bribe them and how to deal with them better.
Well, Aaron, we've had a just wonderful time talking with you. Really appreciate you coming on and sharing some of your perspective with us. It's been great. Now, if folks want to get to know a little more about what it is that you teach and what you do, you've written a book, is that right?
Yeah, it's called How to Become a Successful Commercial Model.
And that sounds like a great resource, even for a photographer looking at what goes into your side of the business.
I think it would be invaluable to photographers, because it will really, even though it's really speaking to the models, but this is a way for photographers to learn how to deal with models. And pretty much everything in there would be valuable to photographers as well as the models.
And they can get their hands on that book through your website?
Yeah, you can go straight to the website. It's howtomodel.com, just howtomodel.com, and you can look at some of my work. There's a little link. It's Aaron's Jobs, and you can see some of the print work. You can read about my acting and modeling boot camp, where I just travel around the country, you know, just teaching people basically what I do during the week, you know, getting started, creating photos, using techniques, marketing, the business side of the industry. And so what I'm finding is that, you know, if there's a group of people in a specific area that have an interest in doing the seminar, please just, you know, send me an email from the website. And once I get a small group together, then I just, you know, arrange one in that particular market.
That sounds great. Well, it sounds like a lot of opportunities for photographers, and we've certainly learned a lot tonight just chatting with you. So, yeah.
Hey, this is fun. I tell you, like I said, I've never had people ask me these types of questions from the photographer's perspective. So It was really interesting. I enjoyed it very much, and best of luck to you guys as well.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Well, that's all we have for this episode of Light Source,
the brightest podcast on the internet.
Be sure to check out the show notes at studiolighting.net for the things that we talked about on today's show.
And there you can also find links about our photography and keep up with the stuff that we've been shooting.
And don't forget, you can send us feedback or questions about the show to studiolighting@gmail.com.
And we'll try to answer those questions on the show or in the lighting questions section on studiolighting.net.
You can also get feedback on your photography in our Flickr group, which is at www.flickr.com/groups/lightsource. Till next time.
Take care.
Check out this show and more great photography podcasts at photocastnetwork.com. photocastnetwork.com.